Humboldt County is taking steps toward a new renewable energy operation. It would be in the ocean, but not creating energy from waves. The vision is for an array of wind turbines floating offshore, making electricity from the steady winds. Earlier this month, the Redwood Coast Energy Authority announced the choosing of a consortium of companies to develop the offshore wind farm. This announcement comes after efforts to place a similar wind farm offshore near Coos Bay, Oregon, did not pan out, or haven't yet, anyway. We have two guests with us. Lori Biondini is the RCEA Director of Business Development and Planning. Thank you, Lori, for joining us.
Thank you, Jeff. Happy to be here.
Jason Bush is with us as well. He is the Executive Director of the Pacific Ocean Energy Trust. The acronym lends itself to calling it POET. Hi, Jason.
Good morning, Jeff.
Good to have you both here. Lori, let's start with you. RCEA, Redwood Coast Energy Authority, is a joint powers authority. Tell people outside Humboldt what you do.
Sure. We are a joint powers authority whose member agencies include the incorporated cities within Humboldt County, as well as the county and the Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District. And we were formed in 2003 to pursue sustainable energy initiatives in Humboldt County. We were rather unique for the time, having this joint powers agency specifically dedicated to saving energy and becoming an energy independent area. And since then, we've focused on energy efficiency, and our latest big thing is becoming a community choice aggregator here in California.
What does that mean?
It means that we now sell retail electricity to our customers. So our jurisdiction includes just the county of Humboldt right now, and we have about 93% of eligible electricity customers in the county now get their electricity from us. So we buy it on the wholesale market and then retail it to customers.
And what advantage does someone get out of that process?
Sure. Well, they get local control. That is a big one, as well as being able to increase our renewable energy content of the electricity that comes into the county. So when we started the program, we had two big goals, which was one, increase the local renewable energy resources that we're using to provide electricity to our county, as well as promote economic development in the area and provide cost savings to our customers. So we're now providing retail electricity at a lower cost than our competitor, which is an investor-owned utility.
And how much is being generated there? I mean, how much have you been able to develop local resources for energy generation?
Sure. Right now we're at about 25% of our energy is produced locally, and that is all biomass power.
Okay. So you have a biomass burner somewhere?
We do. We have actually three in the county, and one is currently operational, and one is set to come online this year.
So in terms of developing renewables offshore, was there a process of considering which type of power generation before settling on offshore wind?
Yeah, there was. We actually have been, thinking about this since 2003. But in 2010, we were awarded a grant from the California Energy Commission to study exactly that question, which local renewable resources do we have available to us? And what, how would we want to prioritize? And we went through a three-year planning process that included a lot of community input and stakeholder input, and figured out that we really need wind and we need biomass as well as small hydro, so like run-of-the-river hydroelectric dams. And then energy efficiency is always going to be something, conserve energy first and make things as efficient as we can as technology develops. And then we have this world-class wind resource. Essentially, we have both great onshore and offshore wind resources, but our offshore wind resource is, they've measured the average wind speeds out off the North Coast to be about 10 meters per second, and, a feasible project for most developers is 7 meters per second. So that's what's happening elsewhere in the world, and we have this great wind resource that we've identified that we can tap into.
So you've certainly reached the threshold there at 10 meters per second to get the generation going.
Yeah.
We're talking to Lori Biondini, the Director of Business Development and Planning at the Redwood Coast Energy Authority, about the plans for an offshore wind farm from Humboldt County. Jason Bush from Pacific Ocean Energy Trust is with us as well. Here's your chance to ask questions about getting energy from the ocean, whether it's from the ocean itself or from wind. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Jason, Pacific Ocean Energy Trust actually begins with wave power originally, didn't it?
That's correct, Jeff. We started as the Oregon Wave Energy Trust in about 2007. And about 2 years ago, we shifted from being really a state-based organization focused just on wave energy to being a regional organization focused on all forms of marine renewables, including wave, tidal, and offshore wind, which we view as a fairly extraordinary opportunity that's essentially emerged here in the last 2 to 3 years.
Is offshore wind just the technology that feels the most ready for actually generating some power?
I think that's correct for the West Coast. Clearly, there are some opportunities like Puget Sound where tidal is essentially a technology that has been commercialized, is going in the water around the world. So that could work in certain places where you have that necessary resource. Wave energy, as you're probably well aware, we're in the process of building a test and demonstration facility right off Newport, Oregon, affiliated with Oregon State University. And so I think that suggests we have a few years to continue to focus on letting that wave energy technology develop to commercialize. But wind is, at least a portion of the technology is very well developed. In Europe, there's over 15 gigawatts of installed wind capacity. Now, that's bottom-mounted wind. That means it's, it's literally connected to the ocean floor firmly. But the technology we're talking about on the West Coast would be floating wind technology. Because our shelf is relatively steep, you can't deploy a bottom-mounted technology in many places along the West Coast economically. It only works out to about 50 or 60 meters in depth. That would put these wind turbines essentially on your coastal doorstep. And I don't think that's probably going to work so well on the West Coast of the United States. So the floating aspect is being developed, which is not really a new technology. It's actually developed and derived from the oil and gas sector, where they've been floating large things in the ocean for a very long time. We're just marrying the floating component with the existing wind component.
The project that had been talked about for the Coos Bay area, does that have any life left in it, or is that officially just off the table for now?
I think it's, let's say folks aren't talking about it too much publicly right now, but the fundamentals for that project are still good. The location, the wind, the deep water port, the clean energy, it's the economic opportunity, it's all still there. I think that that project started almost three, four years ago and was finally pulled about 2 years ago. The downside there was that we left about $40 million of federal money on the table that the company had been awarded for that, for the development of that project. So that money is officially been pulled, no question. But the program, the wind program, the Department of Energy continues. They still have a budget, and so there could be other opportunities for some federal funding, but the project itself still looks good just on its fundamentals.
All right, just the location and the idea of it.
Right.
Lori Biondini, it sounds like you've got a fair amount of community support there, that there's some excitement about the idea of this offshore wind farm. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. I think there's excitement about being able to push forward this, sort of emerging technology, and, it hasn't been done. We thought it might be done in Oregon or on the Central Coast of California, and that hasn't been the case, and so we're excited to sort of lead the way up here. And I think that, our community is generally supportive of things that might also indicate some economic development for the area. We're fairly economically depressed, as many areas are. We had, fishing and timber industries that, haven't been doing as well, and so I think we're excited about all the possibilities.
So 4 weeks ago, you announced the selection of a consortium of companies to move ahead. To what? What are the next steps now, Lori?
Sure. So the next step is to put together a lease application. So we're going to continue community outreach to get input about what exactly should go into the lease application, specifically what sites in the ocean would be looking at that would hopefully have the least amount of impacts for other ocean users. And then we would put together this lease application and submit it to the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. At this point, it would be an unsolicited lease application because BOEM hasn't decided on any specific sites that they are, going to lease at this point. And so that would trigger a letter from them that would ask for any competitive interest in the site, and it's likely that there will be. There will be lots of interested developers in the North Coast area, and so then we would need to go through a competitive process that would, you know, hopefully allow us to secure site control.
So when you mention a site not being chosen, and you did mention earlier that there, you know, out offshore in Humboldt, you've got 10 meters per second of wind, which is better than the usual threshold of 7 meters per second. But are you cross-referencing, in a sense, where the wind is good with what will also cause the least disruption from people who would complain about visual aspects and things like that?
Yeah, exactly. There's lots going out in the ocean. There's fishing. There are... you know, there are things on the bottom that we might not know about at this point that, you know, could impede a construction project. There are, you know, just a lot of things happening that would need to be considered before the exact site, which would be maybe about 12 by 12 square miles, would be decided upon.
Wow. That's a lot of room. I mean, we're talking the array would cover the whole 12 by 12 or?
No.
Just... that would be the zone in which it would happen.
Yeah.
Okay. We're talking about offshore wind energy with Laurie Biondini, who is the Director of Business Development and Planning at RCEA, the Redwood Coast Energy Authority. Jason Bush is with us as well with some expertise in this area. He is the Executive Director of the Pacific Ocean Energy Trust. You can join the conversation on the exchange. Questions about getting energy from offshore, comments, ideas, 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Jason, there are a couple of different versions in consideration, apparently, of floating wind farms. How different are these from deployment to deployment?
Well, there are, say, about 5 to 7 different floating technologies that are available today and several in development. Only a couple of those, Principal Powers Technology, which is a member of that winning consortium with RCEA, they have a... what's called a semi-submersible technology. It looks like three columns floating in the water, interconnected with supporting infrastructure, grid, and then a flat platform or the turbine sitting on top of all of that. Another technology that has already been deployed is a technology called Highwind. It's called a spar technology, which is essentially the tower for the turbine simply extends down into the water and is ballasted and then moored to the seabed, and that ballast keeps that turbine stable. Two very different ways to do it. That technology is owned by Stad Oil, who recently changed their name to Equinor. So Equinor's first project with 5-6 megawatt turbines has already been deployed and is operating off the east coast of Scotland, and that is the first commercial floating project in the world and has been performing quite well. Then there are a number of other versions that are out there, some Japanese companies, Mitsubishi Heavy Industries, a French company called Ideol, and several others under development.
So I understand that one of the concerns with Coos Bay was the cost of the power. Just getting it to shore would make it expensive. I mean, I imagine that is still an obstacle in some of these systems. I mean, we're talking about having to put this fairly sophisticated spinning technology that creates electricity out in a fairly tough environment.
That's correct, and you know, that's really what the issue is with all of this is how do we drive down the cost of these new technologies? And now the upside is that the significant development of offshore wind around the world has driven down the cost of wind. In fact, it's reduced by about 65% over the last 10 years. And the last few projects that got contracted in Europe came in at rates that did not require subsidies. In other words, they're competing head-to-head with existing renewables. Now, those are bottom-mounted technologies, but many aspects of those translate to floating. We expect to be on the same cost curve, which, as you can imagine, drops with the amount of installed capacity out there. And so these projects need to happen, and, of course, the first projects will probably be come in at a premium, but the numbers are improving all the time. You know, transmission is always virtually no projects get built on land or otherwise without some investment in transmission. So that's sort of a sort of normal part of the equation. Granted, we're doing deployment at sea, and everything costs more at sea, but that's one of the advantages as well of these floating technologies, is that rather than having to take out specialized equipment like jack-up barges and working out in the ocean where everything comes at a significant premium, instead you build these things in dry dock, very close to shore, or literally onshore, and then just simply tow them out to where you want to go and anchor them to the seabed. So that can really help drive down the cost of these floating technologies.
So, Lori, as you look at the plan for the Redwood Coast, how big does it have to be able to make sure you get some economies of scale in power generation?
Sure. Well, we're looking for about 100 to 150 megawatt project as a phase one. I think that's what would be delivered, what we could have delivered to our community, and what would be feasible as far as how large of a project. And then anything above that would likely require some transmission upgrades as well.
When you put the request for qualifications out in February, were there any concerns about the numbers of entities likely to respond?
I don't know about concerns. I think we were just holding our breath a little. I think we were not really sure what to expect, and we're pleasantly surprised with a lot of interest.
Because you got actually six respondents, right?
Yes.
And chose the one. So I want to understand again. So the consortium you chose is companies that have some expertise in this area, but it's still a limited expertise because it hasn't been done much, as Jason was saying. So, but they're going to be the developers, but not the actual. They still have other people to hire to do the work.
Well, they do actually have a good deal of expertise. I mean, there are only, as Jason mentioned, a handful of companies that have deployed this floating technology, but Principle Power is one of them. They've deployed it off the coast of Portugal. They did a two-year pilot project with their wind float technology. And then EDP Renewables has, a huge amount of renewable energy out in the world. So they're really, you know, an expert essentially at, you know, developing renewable energy projects in many places in the world. And Acker Solutions, that's going to be kind of, I guess, transferable skills. As Jason was mentioning, this is, they've worked on offshore oil and gas platforms and technology. And so it's somewhat transferable skills, even though it's, you know, a pretty new project. And then we have a couple of environmental and planning consultants who also have these transferable skills, where they're just going to be focusing on the environmental planning aspects of the project. So we do have a great group of experts that are going to be working on this.
It's those last two I want to ask about, because I can imagine this could be a regulatory hurdle and permitting nightmare, because it just hasn't been done much, certainly not in the United States.
Sure, yeah. It's going to be, the permitting process alone will be a multi-year effort. We'll need to ensure that all the issues will be addressed, lots of public input, and there will just be lots of technological, economic, environmental issues that need to be addressed.
So I have to assume that several levels of government are involved here, because we are talking about offshore in the ocean. So the feds are probably involved here, too. Given the general emphasis on fossil fuels from the administration and cabinet at the moment, any concerns there?
No. I would say, well, there's probably always concerns, because hard to predict what this administration is going to do. But California has always been really steady. We're not thinking about wanting to develop any more offshore fossil fuel, productions, essentially. And so I think that even if that were something that the feds were pushing, I believe that California would push back just as hard.
So, Lori, what's the idea here, the ideal timeline even on when things could happen, when you could get wind turbines floating offshore and sending electricity back to Humboldt County's coast?
Sure. Our ideal timeline is 5 to 7 years from now. I think, my personal ideal timeline would be 2025, around there. Mm-hmm. I think that would be a success.
2025 would be the year when the lights would go on, or well, the yep. wind turbines would start going. The lights are already on, yes.
Yeah.
Jason Bush, how fast is the technology coming along here? You mentioned that the cost is coming down, so I assume that means that as deployments go further, a lot of lessons are learned.
Indeed. I think over the next 5 years, you're going to see several hundred megawatts of installed floating wind around the world. There are, just off the top of my head, about seven projects that I'm aware of that are tracking in various stages of development. Those are real numbers. Those are real utility scale projects. And as you look at the cost of these technologies, it's a pretty well understood equation. It's the cost of the capital investments. It's the cost of the capital itself, if it's debt financed. There is the operation and maintenance, and all of these factors are coming down by virtue of experience with installing wind projects around the world. So I think it's extremely promising. It's around the corner. I think 2025 is probably an appropriate timeline, and pretty excited to help be a part of it and make it a reality for the west coast of the United States, clean energy from the ocean.
All right, we'll be checking in many times, I'm sure, before 2025 to see how things are going. Lori Biondini is the Director of Business Development and Planning at the Redwood Coast Energy Authority. Thank you. Jason Bush, the Executive Director of Pacific Ocean Energy Trust, thank you for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.